Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, here we go. Toy Department, everybody. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I think we have a full show, right? Should we just get into the show this week?
I have two takes that I'm anxiously waiting to share with you. So it's just one. But do we want to knock out either Top Chef or Challenge Reunion before we get into the real takes? Or do you want to waiting?
Top Chef and Challenge Reunion are not the real takes.
No, I have one take that I've been keeping off the internet because I wanted to put it on the pod first. I wanted to put it on wax.
All right, let's. Why don't we get to it now? Let's put it on wax then.
Okay. We Are Lady Parts is the best show of the year.
Whoa! Hot take! Oh, man!
I'm not even sure it's that hot, but it is a take.
I did not see that coming.
No,
No. I just didn't. I just didn't see it coming for you, particularly, not because of the show, but because it airs on Peacock, and I didn't know how many you'd be able to watch. I'm assuming you watched more than one to come with that hot take. Is that correct?
I watched the whole thing, and then I watched most of it again.
Oh my God! Wow. Okay.
Because my wife watched it, and then I was like, I want to watch it again with you.
Okay. So was it it was all available, obviously. I'm assuming you didn't subscribe to Peacock to get it.
Let's say I found a way to acquire it.
Fair enough.
It is not all free on Peacock, unfortunately. I it's still just one episode on Peacock, which is perplexing to me. And like, to me, this is the kind of show, if you made the whole thing available, or like three of the six episodes available, but with commercials or something, then I think you would get subscribers out of it. I think it's that good. I think it's that original. I laughed. I cried. I love all the characters.
One is not enough, though, right?
What?
Like the pilot episode. One is not enough.
It's not enough.
I would say to be completely hooked, yeah.
It's not enough because it doesn't, you know, I will never watch another episode of Girls 5 ever, but even this, as I was intrigued by the first episode, this touches a lot of my happy zones, so it was something I wanted to see anyway, but like, there are people who won't do that, who would love this show if they could watch three episodes, you know, and one episode is literally like 25 minutes of content. I don't get it. This is not the way to get people to subscribe to your service. It's not. I don't know how you fix that or what the right thing to do about that is. But let's talk about the show, because
yeah. I should establish that I watched three episodes. So,
okay.
Before we get too far down the road, I did not see you watching the whole series. So
I thought about texting you midweek saying you should watch all of it, but then also I didn't want to spoil my hot take. So. Here's the thing, man. First of all, this is a really good punk band that they've written really good punk songs for.
Yeah, yep, I would agree with that. You've obviously heard a lot more than I have of their songs.
Have you gotten to the actual... I know they talk about the song, but have you gotten to the actual performance of Voldemort Under My Head rap?
I don't think so. No. It was just the sort of like, I don't, right. They're still fighting over whether they're going to do that song, right?
Right. Okay. I think that might be the best song. But just in terms of like aesthetic and what they're doing, Bashir with a good beard is a great example. Like, This show kind of only works if they're actually a good punk band. And we may have to talk about it again after you watch the rest of it, because the last three are sort of where the meat is. But the the whole conceit of this requires the punk band to be good enough and intriguing enough that, like, you want the main character to overcome her fears and be part of it, right?
Yep.
And they've I want to look up the woman's name. It's Nita Manzur, I want to say.
Yes, that is correct.
I just think this is so brilliant because she's written a story that first of all allows us to sort of feel the struggle of a young Muslim woman through the eyes of Amina, the lead character, and then also uses this brilliant punk setup to, like, really address real issues, but also they're hilarious and they rock super hard, and all of the characters in the show are so cleverly and well drawn. Like, we've talked about the lack of character development in a lot of the stuff we've watched the first 5+ months of this year. Like, a lot of the stuff we've been like, you know, I don't care enough about these people. And this show doesn't do, you know, again, the first episode is piloty built around the main character. But for the most part, like, this show exposes the pieces and the depths of these characters through story. And it's so well done. And the mental and emotional struggle of trying to respect your religion and your heritage and your culture while also trying to live in the world in a reasonable way is so, like, it really is brought to the screen in an incredibly identifiable way. I think this show is a triumph.
Yeah, and we sometimes talk about representation and how nice it is to see stories in worlds that we don't get to see, or things about people that we don't get to see. And I think it can sound a little homeworky, or, you know, in that small acts.
Difficult.
Difficult. This is not that, you know, like it's in some ways it's a workplace comedy like a Michael Shore production would be. And, you know, his last show, I think, was another one that did representation.
Yeah.
Assimilated into just just an entertaining story.
And
you know,
it's so funny, too. Like, maybe I haven't said that enough times so far. It is so effing funny. And also so, I can't tell you how much I cried watching this show. Even now, thinking about some of the stuff, like, just the, you know, self-actualization of lovable characters makes me cry. And watching this young woman, like, come into herself and figure out how to occupy the space she wants to occupy in the world. It was beautiful and hilarious and just everything I want out of television. It really was.
Yeah, that's a good job by you. Because, I mean, I'm enjoying it, and I would have finished it, but now I'm, like, super excited to finish the rest of it. You know what I mean?
So. It's so good. It's so good. I forget, is there first pub gig in the first 3 episodes?
It is not. They have not played a pub gig yet.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay. No, pretty much, like, 80% of the best stuff is in front of you. It's so good down the stretch. So I almost think we should circle back and talk a little more next week when you finished it, because I have a feeling when you watch the rest of this show, even if you don't join me in the best show of the year take, the last 3 episodes are going to be sort of blow your mind. It's great.
All right. I'm fired up for that. Look at you. Hot take out of the box.
It was so good. It's just so good. And I've been reading some of the stuff that Nita Manzur has said about it. And about representation and about, being Muslim and Muslim representation in British television. She just seems like a fascinating and super thoughtful person. I'm so excited about this show. Everyone should watch We Are Lady Parts.
All right. I'm going to save my take for later. I don't think it's as hot as your take, so I'm good. It's fine. I guess I should have hyped it up a little bit more.
Wait, this is a take about something else this week that you've got?
Yeah, I have a take about a different thing that we watched.
Well, let's do that now. Let's go take to take, man. Why are you waiting?
Because we got Top Chef. We got Challenge Reunion.
Wow.
I don't know.
You're teasing. It's a tease.
Yeah,
okay.
Tease.
All right. Let's knock out the Challenge Reunion. What surprised you at the Challenge Reunion?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Same. Except I guess I will say this.
So you know what? All right. If I'll say. All right. Sorry. I know you're about to say a thing.
I feel like we're about to say the same thing.
Hisela, was it who wasn't there? That surprised me a little bit.
Who was just that weren't there. Very ridiculous.
That didn't surprise me.
Well, it's not that she was ridiculous, but the way that she was ridiculous, specifically with regards to the Anissa situation,
yeah,
which she still
she doubled down on that for sure.
Angry about it, and not only do I, Challenge superfan and relative expert, have no idea what she's upset about, she literally can't explain it in English.
No.
Like, she's saying all this stuff, and Derek and Darrell are both like, lady, what are you talking about? Like, this is the stuff you're saying is just not true. And then she just goes with, she lied to my face, which I think we could, like, they could have gone to the clips and been like, she did not.
Yeah.
But instead, they just let her say.
The clips a lot, by the way, to contradict people during the course of this show. That would have been a good spot to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's weird, but whatever. I don't care, and I don't expect to see her again. I was shocked with how many people were like, "Great job, you were so good," because she wasn't.
Yeah, I agree. I do kind of expect to see her again. I guess you know what? I take it back. This was a surprising thing. To hear that she was the first person asked,
yeah,
that was surprising.
No
offense.
I'm skeptical of that.
Nobody contradicted her when she said it.
Yeah, because no one contradicted several of the blatantly false things that she said, because I don't think they wanted to fight.
They didn't want to smoke.
Because, like, she very quickly changes her tone and inflection of voice and starts, like, steps right up to the edge of snapping her fingers. You know what I mean? Like, it's, she goes to, like, don't you mess with me so fast. That's like, what are we doing here?
It was 100% attitude and 0% substance.
Yeah. And I, maybe me saying I don't expect to see her again is like a, you know, trying to speak it into existence, because I find her incredibly frustrating to watch.
Yeah, but that kind of makes her good TV, I think.
I guess. My wife said the same thing, but I don't like it. She makes me annoyed in a way that's like, I want you off my screen.
Yeah, she's playing a heel. She's doing she's doing a good job of it.
I know, but Devin, like, I like a good heel. I feel like she's a bad heel.
You like a heel that knows they're a heel.
Yes,
she does.
That's right. I like a heel with some self-awareness.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly seems like they are, you know, and this could just be wishful thinking on the part of the contestants, but they do seem like they're really hoping for another Challenge All-Star season, right?
I think they've basically, at this point, if they don't do another Challenge All-Star season, it's going to look like something behind the scenes went horribly wrong.
Yeah. This is a semi-hot take for me.
Okay.
I think I would like to see Maria Menounos and Nate Burleson host all future reunions.
I think that's the coldest, you know, that's an incredibly lukewarm take. That was the best reunion hosting I've ever seen. Nate Burleson is a fucking pro, man. Nate Burleson is built for this. Like, we're watching the NBA playoffs and talking about who's built for the postseason. Nate Burleson is built to host a Challenge reunion. Not only is he wildly good as a television host, like, for a guy who was playing football 3 years ago, he is a fucking pro. He can make all the turns, but he's also so funny. And he clearly watched whether he's a super fan or not, he clearly watched this season enough to have some quick jokes in the middle of that reunion. Like, he was on it. Yep. And Maria Menounos is the world's best TV presenter. So I'm with you. That was an awesome. The hosting was better than the participating in that reunion.
Yeah, 100%. The problem is, I honestly think Nate Burleson is going to be too big a star at some point in the pretty near future.
Yeah,
he's getting a big time CBS gig.
He's on the Strahan path. He's too good to not have a full time TV job. And it's not just NFL. He's just great on TV.
Yeah. So either he's going to be a super main part of some of a network's NFL coverage, or beyond, I think, for him. So
yeah, I think beyond. I mean, I think he'll keep doing the NFL Network stuff, but I'd be shocked if he doesn't get like one of these ABC game shows or, you know, whatever network he's with. Again, you watch it. He's a natural. He's great.
Yeah. It's really, he's just good on TV. Anything else from this reunion you want to roll through? I think Yes got to be a little even more Yes in this episode.
He referenced the Ohlone tribe, which, of course, if you live in the Bay Area, is something you're well aware of. And, you know, he talked about renting his land in Berkeley from the tribe that originally owned it, and nothing could be more Yes. I mean, yeah, effectively reparations. Yeah. And
he said like, reparations. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I'm saying, like, he's right. Like, what he's talking about, while, you know, moderately obnoxious, is 100% true. And he is, you know, one of the 15 people in America living the right way. So credit to him. I love the idea of a frequent challenge competitor whose proceeds all go to like the charities of indigenous peoples. It's incredible and so unlikely. I'm very into that. Like, and here's my other big reunion takeaway is like, when the challenge is acknowledged as America's third professional sport, just ahead of baseball and behind basketball, Derek is the logo, right?
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, I don't think
either that or Arisa throwing two birds up in
okay
the air.
Yeah, well, that's the funny logo, right? Like, that's the one we do on Twitter and pass around the Arisa logo, but like, no one else in my mind represents like everything that is pure and good about the challenge more than Derek. To me, that guy, he's not the greatest challenger ever, but he's the purest challenger ever. He really just wants to fucking compete, man. Like, everyone says that, but you believe it from Derek, and you can even see it at the reunion. He just, like, all this talk and stuff, the only thing he really had to say was, like, stop fighting, everybody. Like, we're just trying to have some challenge. And then he's just like, I just want to compete again. And his body is, like, tensed and ready to go. That guy's 40.
He was ready to get in the sand of that logo, right?
I know. It's just, it's his love of, it's so pure. And even at the Old People Challenge when he's eliminated, like, he just is here because he just wants to compete and, like, feel alive. And to him, competing in the challenge is feeling alive, and you could just, it like oozes out of him. He's the logo. Yeah.
Darrell's got some of that too, I think, by the way.
He does, but Darrell is a little, Darrell's a little more reserved and like,
yeah, he's just laid back about it. Yeah,
Derek, it's just the love, the essence of challenge flows through him.
Indeed. Speaking of not the greatest challenger or the logo or whatever, Entertainment Weekly did a ranking of the all-time greatest challengers. I feel like maybe we should discuss that next week.
I did not see this.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
I think there are some things you'll find controversial about some of their selections.
I mean, should we just do it now? Why are we waiting?
Because that would, I feel like we could almost do a whole pod on that, and we have other stuff to talk about.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
All right, fair enough.
And I'd like you to take some time with the list. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All put it up. We'll put it up in the homework.
All right.
How's that?
Little addition to the homework.
Yeah. Like, you know, we'll throw a link up with the pod so people can check it out.
I like it.
All right. Anything else from this reunion? Nothing felt super essential about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel pretty good about what we said.
I wish there were some more people who showed up, you know.
Yeah, it was very short on people. And, you know, maybe some of the people who would have brought some more of the drama, like I'd have liked to see Arisa there or Ruthie or Anissa to answer what Hisela was saying.
I was surprised that Arisa and Ruthie didn't show up. I also wasn't surprised that Kendall didn't show up, but it would have been better if they did. You know,
clearly.
What I mean?
Clearly. And again, like, Hisela is so absurd. Like, the whole I'd ride with with Kendall before I ride with Anissa again. First of all, I don't believe you. And second of all, if that's true, like, you're the idiot here. You are the idiot.
Agreed. Agreed. you hate her so much. It's great. Okay.
Because, like, I'm down with trolling, but, like, base it on something.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then tell me you're trolling, because otherwise you look stupid.
I'll say this, though. Would the season have been more or less interesting if she wasn't here?
You're probably right.
Right. So, yeah. That probably means that if they do this again, they'll invite her back.
You're probably right about that. But hopefully she'll be eliminated faster next time. Although I got to say, like, props, because I thought when she fell, I was like, ooh, that's an ACL. And it was. And she kept going. So credit to her for that.
Gutty performance in that final.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Top Chef. Speaking of finals.
We're close.
We're not at the final, but this was a very, like, you were close to the final feeling episode. You know what I mean?
First of all, do you think they planned those ties?
Boy, there sure did seem to be a lot of them. And the first thing that I thought was, why would you have an even number of judges?
That's exactly. The only reason to have an even number of judges is so that if it's at all close, you can be like, oh, we tied. Gonna have to go talk about it in the pagoda.
Yeah. And it was a lot of damn ties. You know,
there was
only
one that wasn't a tie, I think. And it was, I think Jamie beat Byron like 9-1 or something like that.
Yeah. For some reason, maybe I'm remembering this wrong. I thought Byron got smoked twice. But maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe he did.
I would also say this, right, was that they liked every dish. You know what I mean? That's another reason why it felt close to the final, that it was like small things that they were, you know, knocking people off for, you know?
Yeah, even the one except where Byron got killed by Jamie.
Plating everything.
Well, Dawn, I mean, I was scared for Dawn. Because, like, that's how the best chef goes home, right? Like,
yeah,
a fucking mandolin accident.
And then you got to make dessert.
But then you got to make dessert without bleeding in it. Yeah, it was nervy because I would have been really upset. Frankly, I would have been pretty upset if anybody other than Byron went home at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, I don't know.
Look,
it would have sucked if Dawn went home, but also it's like, you're getting into the last chance kitchen where you just have to win one to get back. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, but here's what I'm saying, right? I feel like we already lost one of our best competitors in Sarah. Like, I just want to see the best remaining chefs cook in the final. And I felt like there was a gap between Byron and everyone else.
Oh, see, I didn't feel like that. I feel like, you know, I've said this before about Byron on the show. I feel like Byron is just that guy that he's the guy that on his day can beat anybody. You know what I mean?
Well, anybody. I think almost.
I feel like. And, you know, he went on to show that in Last Chance Kitchen. So.
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody other than Chris, you could say that about, though.
It's true. But I think he is more. I think he's just a high variance chef. Like when he's on, he's really on. He can be really good. He's just not as consistent as some of the other chefs.
Well, but that's what I mean.
I think he's better chef than Maria.
But that's what I don't think so. And that's kind of what I mean when I say there's a gap. Like, I think Maria is now at the bottom because Jamie has really leveled up in my eyes. But I thought Maria was, you know. If we averaged out their performances, I feel like Maria was closer to the others than she was to Byron. I really do.
I don't know. See, I think, to me, Byron, Maria, and Jamie, I think, are roughly the same. I agree with you that Jamie is probably the best of those, but I don't think there's a huge gap.
Jamie's trip through Last Chance Kitchen kind of crystallized for her what she's doing, I think, and I just think she's been pretty aces since she got back.
Yeah, look, I don't have any problem with Jamie. She was on the bottom in the episode previous to this.
Yeah, it was a weird one, though.
Yeah, it was a weird one. Just saying.
No, but the bottom is three people, and she's one of the lower three people. But she, but again, I think I thought Byron was clearly the and again, we're talking about a bunch of great chefs, so it's not a diss to Byron, but I don't think he was as good as anyone else there. And I thought that was the right elimination, you know. And I think Dawn, despite bleeding in half of her second course, made the best food.
Yeah, Dawn, look. You know, I mean, I feel like we're headed to, and you know, upsets happen, but I feel like we're headed to Don Gabe Chota, right? So
I hope
as,
so.
As your three-person final.
And I think it's fair to say.
There's any outcome, any order of that is perfectly reasonable, acceptable, I think.
Right? Well, right. It's Top Chef, and like once you're down to the top five or six, like there's no bad chefs. There's just, you can't get there if you're not one of the best eight chefs. But I do think those three have kind of been the best all year long. I mean, with respect to Sarah, who it was for most of the season, like Gabe and Shota for sure have been there all season. And Dawn, other than like a couple of bumps figuring out what it was she's doing there, since like week four, Dawn's been aces, man.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she was low in Restaurant Wars, but she baked great food, right? If I recall, they were like not even considering her out.
No, they never considered eliminating her in Restaurant Wars because, yeah, the Restaurant Wars issues, like, I still think when we look back at that, the food of the losing group was incredible. It's just the winning group was so damn good that they looked bad in comparison and their service was bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, I, you know, Gabe and Dawn were both on that losing team, I think, but also, you know, the actual food they made was great. It was like some of the other decisions, like Gabe's amuse-bouche that hurt them.
Yeah. So I think that we are, I think that we're in, a good spot and mostly the right people have advanced. There's not too many flukes, and I think we have a pretty good idea of who's going home.
Yeah, I know you're down on Maria, but
I'm not down on Maria. I think Maria she's fantastic TV. She seems like a really good person. I think she's a very good chef. I just don't think she's quite as good as some of the other ones.
Well, I think what she is, by her own admission, is not as well trained and not as fine dining as some of the other chefs.
That's certainly true.
Right. I know.
Just in a way, yeah.
I'm going somewhere with this. But, and I've said it before, so maybe I'm not going anywhere interesting with this. I do think when, as we get further along and we get closer to the cook your food and make it good part, her prospects get better and better.
Yeah.
Because, like, you don't – here's the thing that we have to remember about Maria. She got on Top Chef with a taco truck. Like, there's a lot of taco trucks, and I don't believe any of their proprietors have ever been on or even maybe considered for Top Chef previously.
They've definitely had truck people on before. I don't know if taco truck.
That was a hyperbolic statement, but – the fact of the matter is the vast majority of these chefs come from fine dining kitchens, right?
Yeah.
Or they're like private chefs. So you are doing something really special at your taco truck if it gets you on Top Chef. So I think we just got to remember, like, she has had some moments where they have been blown away by her flavors. And if she gets to step into her own wheelhouse, I have a feeling she will be formidable.
She's great. She's an underdog. But I would also say that Shota, who does not cook with spices, beat her in a challenge of Mexican ingredients. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that that was a it's quick fire, so maybe it's not definitive. But I just think that she's not quite at the other chef's level. And I don't mean that in any shade to her
I think in some ways you're right. I'm just saying, like, she's the kind of underdog that's pretty – she's a live underdog.
Yeah. I think everybody left's a live underdog. You know what I mean? Jamie's a live underdog.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So
it's a fun time for Top Chef.
Yeah. And we should also say, and this is part of my plea to Magical Elves, you know, a little bit, or Bravo, or whoever's deciding what's going on with Last Chance Kitchen. Last Chance Kitchen, it was a two-part episode this week. They have decided who is coming back to the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a surprise to you that I didn't know this until just before we taped, but you didn't know this either, right? So,
yeah, Last Chance Kitchen has become like an unwieldy beast that needs to be tamed, because there can't be an entire episode's worth of Last Chance Kitchen content between Top Chef episodes. Like 15 minutes on the internet is good.
Yeah, part two alone is 30 minutes.
That's too much. Too much. Yeah.
So guys, like, just make it easy to watch, man. If you're gonna have essential show content, you know, part of the canon stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to have to be figuring out how to like beam it from my phone to the TV just to watch the extra 40 minutes of content. It's too much. You're asking too much.
I shouldn't be confused. And we love you. And you know what I mean. And you're still asking.
Stop hurting us.
Exactly. So thank you. That is my plea.
We love you. Stop hurting us.
Stop hurting us. Okay. Should we move to my hot take?
Yeah, sorry. What on earth?
What's happening right now?
Oh, I'm sorry. I want to apologize to you because I went ahead and pulled up that Entertainment Weekly challengers list anyway.
Yes. Okay.
And you know, it's one of those dumb internet slide deals. And
they're looking for clicks if you're going to.
Yeah, but you know, you can do the view all. But when you do view all, it puts them in backwards order, so I got very confused for a second.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's save that for
yeah,
next.
Yeah, sorry. My apologies.
Okay. All right, so here's my take, which I'm now worried that you're not going to think is hot at all.
Bring it.
Zack Snyder is 21st century Michael Bay. Michael Bay 2.0.
I don't know how hot a take that is. I do think it's very wrong, but not in a way, not because I think you're being rude to Zack Snyder. Is that?
Is it the Michael Bay end of the equation you have a problem with?
No, I just don't think it's a very good comparison.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I see what you're doing because they both make disappointing movies filled with action.
It's not just that they're action. It's
overly cinematic set pieces.
Slathered on over the top action, but it's really, honestly, it's also, I feel like their visual style is extremely similar in the way that they like light and shoot things.
Well, in general or just with this? Because in general, I think, frankly, one of the only things Zack Snyder has going for him is a totally individual and unique visual style. But that wasn't really here in this movie. This was very Michael Bay.
So you're saying mostly in this. Okay. I mean, look, 300 obviously is styled to resemble a comic book.
And so are all of his DC movies. So are the like his thing usually is a movie shot in what feels like total darkness.
I am completely baffled that there are large numbers of people who would fervently demand the Zack Snyder version of anything.
Okay, well, that is a separate issue that I think has more to do with comic book fans' desperate hope that their desires, their very specific and unrelated desires, will be served. You know what I mean? I don't think that's about people loving Zack Snyder so much. It's about people saying, God, I wanted Justice League to be good, and it wasn't. Give me the other one.
Yeah, I know, but it's like,
but let's not get into all that because
Zack Snyder version of the Justice League is going to be good. All right,
let me go back to the Michael Bay thing because here I think is the fundamental difference between Zack Snyder and Michael Bay.
Michael Bay is fun, right? Or yes. Going for fun, yes. And yes. Zack Snyder, all of Zack Snyder's films, I'm pretty sure, are kind of joyless, right?
Well,
like they're not. You know,
here's where this gets difficult.
A good time in the muck. You know what
I
mean?
Here's where this gets difficult because I want to be sensitive and respectful.
I do not want to be respectful because this. Sorry, we're talking about Army of the Dead, by the way.
I know that you want to be,
but shit.
Right. It was a terrible, terrible, awful movie. I know that you want to be respectful about what I'm about to say, though.
Yes. Of course, I want to be respectful to you. Yes.
No.
I just don't want to be respectful to this
that's not what
piece of crap.
That's not what I mean at all. I know that you want to be respectful to Zack Snyder about the thing I'm about to mention.
Yes.
I'm starting to wonder if you knew about this.
About his personal family tragedy stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, that, of course, I want to be sensitive to.
So here's the thing that makes it a little difficult for me to pan this awful movie. Just a little difficult. He's clearly obsessed with his daughter's passing. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to murder a film for obsessing over father-daughter stuff that has nothing to do with the story and is totally out of place in the film when the man lost his daughter and it clearly shattered his life apart.
I hear that. And I think all that stuff's fine. None of that was really any of my biggest problems with the movie.
Oh, really? Because yeah. I found that to be, like, listen, this movie's bad on all fronts. But like,
yeah, it's bad on all fronts.
But
it's so long.
But hold on. It's so effing long. But that's the thing. One of the reasons it's long is that this is pure escapist nonsense zombie killing for the most part. Like, the plot of this movie, it has no real end point. It has no real hook or interest. It's just like, do you want to see us kill some zombies? I bet we can do it in a really cool way.
Yeah, there is some of that.
And that seems like the point of an hour and 45 minutes of this film. And then there's an extra 45 minutes squeezed in throughout where Dave Bautista tries to have a relationship with his daughter and, like, someone else's family tries to get repaired. And it's just, like, totally out of place, not developed or supported in any meaningful way. And it just feels like a guy trying to work out his personal problems in the middle of a script that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
So, like, that's like, tough, man. But I can't imagine I can't imagine being a father and having your child take their own life. Like, it's unthinkably horrible, but I'm not sure expensive zombie films is the place to work through your issues. I'm trying to be as sensitive as possible. It's truly devastating what he had to go through, but it just feels like he's spending millions of dollars on films instead of a therapist.
And let's not forget making millions of dollars. Like, this thing is tremendously watched, and I'm sure he got a bucket load.
Well, and look, I'm not going to begrudge him that. If there's enough people that want to watch it, that's how the market works. But at the same time, like, this is a really bad, I mean, it's a really bad movie.
Yeah. I'm so glad that we're gonna have to fight about this because I didn't want this to be like, you know.
Let's just take something very simple about it, okay?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I know what you mean. And let's just take the easiest thing. What the fuck is the ending of this movie?
I don't know. It's so bad, and none of it makes sense.
Like,
you know,
none of
I mean?
The movie makes sense. But just spoiler alert. Let's just talk to someone who's never seen this movie before. What if I told you there's a zombie movie where a bunch of zombies are locked in Las Vegas? And we go through this whole thing with all these characters not only trying to, like, do things for their own lives to be better, but also trying to, like, get past the zombie problem, right? The whole world is trying to get past the zombie problem. Nothing is accomplished. Nobody really develops meaningfully as a character. And at the end, almost literally everyone dies except for the one guy who carries the zombie virus out and probably infects the entire world. What is the point of this?
Survive. Well, the point is clearly is that was naked sequel setting up, right? That's what that was.
I guess, but it's a sequel with none of the stars. It's a sequel with every single meaningful character dead. So it's not, you didn't need to set up a sequel. You could just make a new zombie movie in 3 years. Like, what are we doing here?
I don't know. You're also keep in mind that this character survived a direct nuclear blast because he was locked in a safe.
And how did he get out of the safe? How? And by the way, is he not, like, is his skin not melting off from whatever the radiation situation is when he opens the safe door 10 minutes after the bomb goes off? Like, what are we doing?
Yep. He was walking, you know, he walks 40 miles through the desert or whatever.
Right? With like, $50 million in a backpack?
What? Sucking radiation fallout. Come on, everything man. About this movie was ridiculous. Like, it's the kind of movie where you were calling out lines before the characters say them.
That's, you know, right.
The script is that just obvious and wooden, and it's just
And it's one of those things where, like, the only stuff that is surprising is stuff that should never be in a movie.
Yeah.
Like,
if you're gonna make this movie, you just can't make it 2.5 hours. You just can't. You can't.
No.
It's absurd. All right. Well, you know, I was aware of the stuff with Zack Snyder's family, and I you know, of course, it's got to be awful and unspeakable. But
it is. It is. It's just it feels like it's having a negative effect on work that is put in front of the world. You know, that's why I'm talking about it. Other than that, like, I just feel bad for the guy.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about something that I thought was much, much better.
Okay.
Bo Burnham Inside.
Hmm.
I don't know if this is going to be, and it doesn't seem like it seems like it's doing well. I don't know if it's going to have the same kind of buzz maybe as the Hannah Gadsby special. But I do think this is really an innovative and interesting way to do a comedy special, you know, particularly in this day and age. Like, it's so appropriate for coming out of the moment that we all just sort of went through together, right?
Right. Well, and that's what's interesting. I also love this, although, you know, loved is an interesting word because it's a real head spinner. It is not normal at all. It's very bizarre and very, I don't know what the word is even for what this was, but like it's off the wall, right? It's there are moments.
Yeah.
Tell me if you agree. There are moments where I was like, I mean, I know this is a bit, but I'm a little worried about his mental health. Right.
I never got to the, I'm worried for this guy, because I really always sort of felt like it was a bit.
Okay.
And maybe I'm overestimating that.
No, I don't think you are. I think it had to be a bit, but it really, and maybe it's just that he hit pretty close to home on a lot of like pandemic emotions, right? And I don't know if he has hit on anything as far as a new way to present a comedy special. I think he just made the perfect comedy special from the pandemic. He made the definitive pandemic comedy special in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a really interesting format. It's basically like you're sort of watching this guy make mostly songs, but do a little bit of stand-up and sort of commentary things in his house.
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's,
over the course of the pandemic, he's sort of slowly going crazy. You know what I mean?
Right, and you can and you know, the trick is basically like he grew his hair and beard for the whole pandemic so you could get a sense of time passing, but other than that, it's just a guy in a room. It all could have been shot in a day, right?
Yeah.
So the way that presents on screen is an incredible embodiment of what we all just went through, and the stuff he sings and some of the, I would say there's like 3 minutes of actual stand-up comedy sort of stuff. Like there's maybe another 10 or 15 minutes of him talking into a mic, but it couldn't be called stand-up comedy.
Yeah. There's lots of great shots of him like sadly watching songs that you've already seen from special, you know what I mean?
And I think that sort of like recursive folded on top of itself meta nature of the thing, again, makes it turns into a spectacular representation of what we all went through and were feeling of, like, this repetitive sameness and stuck in our houses for a year. And, like, I thought it was brilliant on that level. And I, you know, again, I don't think this is something that's going to, like, catch on, but I just think it's an incredibly zeitgeisty work. And I think he did an incredible job of bringing really – bringing – a certain, like, the things he's showing us, right, are things that I think, like, a huge part of the world, or at least our country, felt emotions that only people with mental illness had felt before. And he sort of put that on screen in a way that I don't think anyone else has yet.
I also think there was some just really smart commentary about like social media, capitalism at times.
Late stage capitalism really took the brunt of a lot of this.
Some cancel culture stuff, some you know, some of the issues that I think we all sort of experienced during this pandemic, and then even really good meta commentary on trying to be a straight white guy.
Yep,
with opinions on these subjects.
And then there was the Jeffrey Bezos song, which was a pure moment of joy for me.
Yeah. And the other thing that I like, just from me, I think we haven't given him enough credit. The fact that we're just mentioning this now, like, just from a pure songwriting standpoint,
he's so good.
Like, dude wrote some bops. I had no idea he had any musical talent. And like I would bump White Woman's Instagram like right now. You know what I mean? Like,
that song was so funny. The songs in this, like, it's obviously a ridiculous joke, but throughout the special, what I kept finding popping back into my head was his Venn diagram of Malcolm X and Weird Al and putting himself in the middle.
That was great. Yep.
Like
the sexting song or FaceTiming with my mom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's some great like pop R&B stuff. There were some great like New Order-y songs, a couple of like Nine Inch Nails sort of sounding things at times, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, for one guy working with like, you know, what seemed to be basically GarageBand in his garage, he wrote some real bangers. It's very impressive.
Yeah. And there's some amazing visual stuff. And I'm like, could he have really shot all that himself?
I mean, that's what it said.
That's
written, directed, shot, and edited by Bo Burnham. That's what it said. And I don't see why not, because honestly, even though it looks incredible, you can see he sort of shows you the tricks.
Yeah, he does do a lot of that.
I mean, obviously it takes an incredibly good editor, film editor, and also someone who's really clever with lighting arrangements to make that happen. But
some of the lighting in just this one dumb room in his house is like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And I also just thought it was kind of a stroke of genius the way he ended it, too.
Yeah, me too. I thought all of it was really smart. And we're talking a lot, I think, about, you know, how sharp or thoughtful it is. But it's also just really funny, like a lot. You know,
really,
it's weird times,
really,
but it's really
funny. Yeah. Really funny. I mean, pretty much all of the songs are laugh out loud by yourself funny.
Yeah, so I wound up watching this twice, because the first time I watched it was early in the morning, and I fell asleep for a section.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes.
And
I was
you
like,
felt
oh,
like,
I tried.
And then at that point, you felt like maybe the whole thing was a fever dream?
a little bit. And so I was like, I want to go back and watch it, you know, again.
Yeah.
I don't know. I probably will watch it one more time, I think, before.
Yeah, look, I watched it late at night, and the tweet that I wrote afterwards was, I think I just watched Bo Burnham's new stand-up special, but it's definitely possible that my wife just dosed me with mushrooms at dinner, and I've been, like, staring at a blank screen, giggling at hallucinations.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. I also, like, it did almost remind me of watching 13 a little bit, and like, just wow, what a really fresh, innovative take on, you know, subject matter I've seen takes on before.
You mean you
know?
Eighth grade, because 13 grade. Would yeah, be a 13 very different,
a different
thing.
One. Sorry. Eighth grade. Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Same age, different movie.
Yeah, no, it's I think this is a guy that as a filmmaker is good at taking you to a place and making that place feel very real.
Yeah. Yeah. Props to him, man. Doing all that. He's got a nice body work build up before 30. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the worst part of the special.
Is when he turns 30?
Yeah, because you've got this brilliant man who's made a brilliant work of art that you're watching, and you're 40 or about to be, and he's crying about turning 30 and not accomplishing enough, and it's like, ouch.
Yeah, and his plan for 40 is
yeah.
It's not the best.
It's not the best, but it does hit pretty close to home for your boy. So, like, I you know...
Yeah,
well, I find myself staring at a birthday that, for no particular reason, I never really thought I'd see, and it's upsetting. So I deeply feel that, but also I deeply feel ashamed that he's a decade younger than me.
Yeah, I get some of that too. 30 was a real panic for me, and I think because of that, 40 was easier.
You know, it's funny. That's true, and in a way. I'm not feeling any of the panic heading to 40 that I felt heading to 30. But in another way, that in and of itself makes me sad. Like, maybe I've lost the will to fight the aging process at this point.
It's a little bit of that, but at least for me, it was also like, oh, man, 30s. People said 30s would be kind of great, and I didn't believe them, and they were way more right than I was.
Yeah, you know? That's true. That's true. Yeah. How are the 40s? So, they're all right? Yeah, see, that's the problem. There's the problem right there.
Yeah, it's...
That's the answer that makes me nervous.
Yeah, it's... So you get a lot of... So, like, the thing that's cool about your 30s, right, is that, like, you know what you're doing, and you're still young enough to do some things about it, right?
There it is.
Like, that's
it.
Know, that's the sweet spot of the 30s. So you retain that you know what you're doing in your 40s, but you lose some of the other side of that equation.
Right. So. The period of the 30s for like most adult humans is like a basketball player 28 to 32.
Yeah.
Like you've been in the game long enough to understand your abilities and the world around you, but you've still got your best athletic abilities to bring with you. And then like now we're in the stage of like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what I need to do here, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get my body to do it.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned basketball.
Yeah.
I think I brought this up on the show before. I've been playing in a weekly pickup game.
Yeah. I'm so jealous. And
well, don't be. Because in your 40s, it's a constant. Every week is a constant facing of your own mortality.
See. Yeah.
What injury am I coming away this week? Yesterday, I stopped at the 3-point line, and I kind of knew I was going to pass to this guy who was open for three, but I wanted to drop a fake in there, and my knee just buckled.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's not good.
You know what I mean? And everybody saw it, and people are like, hey, man, are you okay? And then I passed the ball. You know what I mean? And that's what your 40s is, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think I know what to do. My body can't do it. I know every week that the next day is going to feel terrible, and that I'm not going to be able to run for the entirety of the games that I need to run in.
Right.
So it's like constant LeBron mode of like, where can I cut corners on movement? And it's terrible. And for me, right, like I was never a great shooter. We don't have to get too far into this. But like I used to have a pretty good handle. And I was a good passer with good vision, and I could run the offense. But now I'm old and slow.
Right.
And so I still can't shoot or jump, but all the rest of that's gone, too. It's just, you know what I mean? Like that. And that's the part. Like, I still know what I'm doing, but I can't do it anymore. That's your 40s.
Yeah. Well, as somebody who did his best work on pickup basketball courts by surprising others with athleticism, I'm really in trouble.
Yeah. That's not going to translate well to future success.
Yeah. Like my best moments were always like, holy shit, that 5'11 white guy just jumped over me for that rebound, you know?
Yeah. My best thing now, I think the thing that I'm trying to hold on to is that I have a surprisingly good post game for someone who is not cracking 5'7". So
I love a short guy post game on a pickup floor. Like, you got those little underhand scoop layups and whatnot.
I got those. I can do little turnarounds, yeah. And you know, I'm bulky, so I can back you. I can back you real far. You
strong
know what
base,
I mean?
Strong base. Yeah. Use that ass.
Yep, there you go. That's my game. That's what I got left.
Oh man, that's a totally different podcast. What do we have left?
I could do a full podcast on what's left, guys.
Yep.
All right, I don't really think we need to talk a lot of basketball. It's just like it's the Nets, right? It's kind of the Nets are bust.
Well, right now, I mean, yeah,
it feels like to me. Crazy?
I don't think it is necessarily that, although it certainly looks that way right now. But I do think the more interesting conversations are probably still coming later, because injuries and just pathetic performances have robbed the second round of some of the excitement I was hoping to see.
More guys are going to get hurt, for sure. I think that's also the sort of like, that's the only wild card left, really.
Man, I just hope people.
Everybody's even in the West, right? I think
pretty much. Yeah, it's wide open. I just hope people are taking the physical issues this year to heart and considering them with the way we talk about things like rest moving forward. Like, I just don't know how you can look around sports and watch guy after guy who took a year off have career years at advanced ages and all these other dudes who played too much getting hurt. Like, this stuff matters. And I just hope that's the takeaway, even though I know it won't be.
I do think there may be a real movement to shorten the season at some point.
I think in all sports, like it's and meanwhile, football's making their season longer. But like, human bodies are not totally made for what we're putting them through with our professional athletes, and that's with the greatest training the world has ever had. You know, so I don't know, man. There's some issues with rest and health that I think need to be addressed. Other than that, like, I've still seen a lot of good basketball games, so I'm not unhappy with what's happening.
It's also definitely the shortening thing. It's certainly not happening in soccer. They just keep asking more and more of those guys and saying, let's just drop international tournaments in the middle of seasons.
Yeah, it's going on right now. Yeah, it's my guy, Pulisic, just showing everybody that he's the greatest American player of all time.
That game, I don't know if it's possible to even go back. Maybe you can find it on Paramount Plus or something. But if you have not seen USA Mexico, it's certainly not the greatest soccer game you'll ever see, but it's one of the most interesting. It is a truly batshit insane game.
I mean, doesn't that make it kind of a classic US Mexico game in a lot of ways?
Yeah, like, I am talking, Spencer Hall, the great college football Twitter
every day should be commentator. Saturday.
Every day should be Saturday. He put it well. He was like, a guy jumped off the CBS set, presumably into the pit of hell, and it was like the 10th most interesting thing that happened during that game.
Yeah, cans and bottles flying everywhere.
Multiple players got hit in the face with full beverages.
Yep.
That was weird. Hands on necks in the middle of a game. Coach got a red card for putting his arm around the ref during a VAR review. Like, hey, buddy, let's just talk this through while the guys were trying to watch the replay. Just insanity. And then obviously lots of insane stuff on the field, and everybody, you know, USA Mexico is a real rivalry and people get real fired up about stuff. And it was spectacle in so many ways, and very CONCACAF and all that stuff. And I just, it was a delight. That game was a delight. And I'll tell you what, Jurgen Klinsmann was right about, like, our players playing in Europe, and really in big time matches of significant consequence. Like, I think it's really necessary. And I think you could just see that those guys were not cowed in any way by that moment, you know, when even when teammates did some things that like could have submarined them really early, you know, they just weren't going to be scared. And that adds, I think, a really fascinating chapter to our rivalry and elevates our ceiling going forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let's just get into a World Cup before we talk ceiling, you know?
Well, we don't we're in the next one, right, already. So it's you know what I mean? Like, we're not going to be, you know, doing a lot of worrying about that going forward.
Yeah, but I mean, like, let's play in a World Cup and maybe even get out of the group stage before we talk about ceiling. I can't.
Yeah, that's fair.
I can't seriously entertain a ceiling for a team that hasn't seen a round of 16 for like 20 years or whatever it is.
It's the first it's a made up competition. It was the first like real competitive game we played in many years. So yeah. That's you know, that part is not great. And look, that in terms of this team and what they need to be going forward, like, we have real international caliber attacking talent,
like
in some places, but we need more, and we do not have real international caliber defenders, and that's.
But isn't this the most talented the team's ever been?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's like, win a game, you know. Now that you have world class talent for the first time in the country's history, go ahead and win a couple games. That's all.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
All right. Should we get into homework?
I think we should.
Got some interesting stuff this week.
I should hope so.
You wanted to watch, we've sort of both talked about it, so I don't mean this is necessarily a you thing, but you wanted to watch Startup, right?
Yep.
On Netflix? Hearing some good buzz about that.
I really like a lot of the actors. Should be great.
There is a thing, and I was trying to look up the name while we were talking, but I didn't get there. We've just been calling it Michael B. Jordan movie on Amazon.
Oh, yeah. But it's an action film.
So yeah, the Michael B. Jordan movie on Amazon. I'll get the name of it before the end of the podcast.
It is called Without Remorse. It's a Tom Clancy joint.
There you go. All right, so we're gonna watch that as well. There's an HBO Max show called Starstruck.
Yeah,
which is about a woman who has a meet cute, and it turns out in an unexpected way, and then get a series out of that. So it's supposed to be very good. Excited for that. And then Betty is coming back, which I
love. Betty.
Do you think HBO, I'm getting the vibe that they're going to drop this week by week. So I don't know if we'll have more than one episode to talk about, but I'm still excited that even if we just have one episode to talk about, because that show makes me very happy.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, like, watching We Are Lady Parts has me in a zone where I'm very ready for some more Betty.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. So we'll get some more of that.
Just like young women living their best lives. More shows about young women living their best lives.
Yeah, figuring stuff out. I'm into it. And yeah, and just being the coolest people in the room. I like
that. Yep.
All right, so that, I think, wraps it up, because there's going to also be a ton of basketball.
A ton of basketball. A little more Top Chef.
Maybe I'll wrap up real quickly.
A little more Top Chef, possibly a breakdown of Entertainment Weekly's best challengers of all time. Because for the first time in months, we don't have any new challenge to discuss. It's going to be a little bit sad, somewhat heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think this would be an ideal way to fill that void, because there's some.
I already have some big problems with the list, and I just gave it a quick eyeball while we were talking. So, yeah, we're going to get deep into that. And that'll be next Tuesday. I think we're done, yeah?
Yeah, I think we're done.
Bye!
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.